The overtime defense was not good enough. You know, we end up getting them third and 10. I got to do a better job there, you know, making the good calls there. And in execution, we got to do a better job. But again, that was not what we wanted. We could win the game right there, you know, on both sides, you know. So we, you know, put ourselves in position there, but end up, you know, getting behind the sticks on offense. But again, punted it away. What a great punt by Torrey. And almost recovered that one. They called him down on that one particular one, and then we just got to operate better. I have to do a better job, you know, setting the defense up for success.
Let's get back to Plumbers 911 Football Monday with Rami Makhlouf on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app. Plumbers 911 Football Mondays are presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and by Busey Bank.
That was as we enter the third hour of Score Overnights on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, and I am Rami Makhlouf with Tyler Farengol on the other side of the glass. You can get in on the show at 312-644-6767 if you got Bears thoughts to get off your chest after another crushing, heartbreaking loss to the Vikings, 30-27 in overtime after Caleb Williams and the offense leads a comeback to force that overtime. But that was about 1 minute of about 10 very frustrating minutes of listening to Matt Eberflus talk about football. And it's always frustrating listening to Matt Eberflus talk about football. I don't know. I should have been counting as that press conference went on. I don't know how many times and about how many different things Matt Eberflus said, I got to be better. And first of all, kudos for taking some blame and some accountability, because that's something that he has shirked and not done throughout the season concerning some of his dumbass decisions that he's made as the head coach of the Bears. So I'll give him credit on that. But man, when exactly do you start getting better at some of this stuff that you're talking about, like the communication on the botched fourth down play again, like calling the right plays, like dialing up the right plays in crucial situations, third and longs, overtime drives, things of that sort? When do you get better? We're 45 games into your career as an NFL head coach, and you're talking about, I need to get better at some of the very basics of your job, dude. When do you get better? Imagine being 2.5 years into your job that you're at right now, and you're going into your boss's office and saying, I need to be better at some of the most basic things that you're asked to do on a day-to-day basis. Like, the communication thing is very basic. The communication thing and guys knowing what you're doing and where they're supposed to be at any given time is something you could have been figuring out with some of the worst rosters we've ever seen put on Bears uniforms the last 2 years. Like, that's not a product of the guys that you were given. That's just you being bad at that. That's just you being really bad at that. When you were getting a free pass for losing these last 2 years, that was not one of the things that Matt Eberflus should have been getting a free pass at. Those very basics of coaching. And when we talk about the play calling in the fourth quarter defensively, and he's saying, I got to be better. Man, for the first year and a half of him being the head coach, and while that roster was going through what it was going through, that overhaul that Ryan Poles underwent, you might be able to look at some of the plays where they came up short and go, well, he just didn't have the dudes. You know what I mean? Draw up whatever you want. He didn't have the dudes. You know what I mean? And he talked about execution in his answer about the overtime play calling. And yeah, players have to execute. But now he's got the dudes. Now he's got the guys. We all look at that defense, and even with injuries to guys like Jaquan Brisker, we look at that defense and we go, and Brian Billings, and we go, there are some players over there. There are some playmakers on that side of the football. You should be able to do some things. Tyler mentioned Montez Sweat in the last segment, who's been very quiet. He got a sack in this game, but he's been pretty quiet for a guy who's making the amount of money that he makes playing in a defense apparently drawn up by a defensive guru. You know what I mean? And they got studs all over that defense. You can't blame it on not having the guys anymore to that any play that you drew up was going to get outdone by your offensive counterpart because they just have better players than you do. You got the guys now, and you're still telling me you need to do better? You're a defensive head coach. You're the defensive coordinator for all intents and purposes of this football team. You're calling the defense and have been now for a full season. And not to mention a long career as a defensive coordinator, linebackers coach, and everything else. You still need to get better in term, and everybody's always getting better. I understand. But you're still at that level as a head coach and as a defensive play caller 45 games into your career as an NFL head coach. I'm tired of hearing, I need to be better. And I'm not the only one. Text here from the 773. Flus should be embarrassed to utter, I have to do a better job on knowing which unit to run out there. Just quit. That's Patrick from Gage Park, the one who texted earlier that he was going to be in the squat rack. Hope you're getting in that workout, Patrick. He also says the post-game comments are 10 times worse than the performance on the field. They probably won't fire him, but they can put a muzzle on that cork sucker. He makes things so much worse. Now, he has to talk after games. Coaches have media duties and responsibility. He has to talk. They can't just say, dude, people don't need to hear from you anymore. Why don't you just go home after this one? Unless they fire him, then he doesn't have to go up there. But as long as he's the coach, he has to go out there and talk to the media and frustrate all of us while he does so. And I just don't understand the logic that he's using and laid out in going for the 2-point conversion. I was watching the game with my brother, and I tried to find the answer to this somewhere, and I don't know, maybe I'm just looking in the wrong places. But my brother was saying that's what the analytics says you should do. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, I can't for the life of me understand why analytics would tell you to go for two there. You're down by 14. Like this, again, this is the most basic of football math. You're down by 14. That's two touchdowns and two extra points to tie the game. Or if you want a touchdown and an extra point and a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. And that's enough to win the game. Why you thought you needed two 2-point conversions there? I can't understand. I can't wrap my head around it. I can't, and I don't know. Maybe somebody can tell me. I'm at Rami is tweeting. Ramie is tweeting. Maybe you can tell me. And by the way, a few of you follow me, I'll make it to that all important 10,000 mark in followers, please. At Rami is tweeting, at 670 score. In addition to 312-644-6767 is how you can get in on the show. Everything he said about Caleb in his press conference, spot on. And I agree with him. Everything else had me pulling my hair out over here, Tyler. Not only can I not watch this guy coach football, I can't watch or listen to this guy talk about football because a lot of the things coming out of his mouth just don't add up, don't make sense, or are things he shouldn't still be saying at this point.
Well, and a lot of the basic stuff we talk about that they're not executing, I remember that opening press conference when him and Poles were introduced, and he was always priding himself on being a disciplined head coach, but yet that's one of the biggest weaknesses of this team. They lack discipline. They lack continuity. There's always dysfunction. There was another instance, end of the first quarter, Rami. They jumped offside. Game clock was ahead of the play clock. And they don't jump, and they jump offsides. They don't hold back. And that's directly on the coach.
Yeah.
The one who's running that unit.
Yeah.
You have to know that the Vikings are not looking to snap the ball right there. Don't jump.
Everything about this team from a coaching standpoint, and especially while Shane Waldron was still there, was questionable, to say the least. Everything about it. And at one time, you could at least say, well, Matt Eberflus is coaching a dominant defense. Like, at one point, you could say that.
That's true.
Now he's not even doing that.
Nope.
Now, they fired Shane Waldron and the offense looks better the last 2 weeks. But now he's not even doing that. Your communication on the sidelines and between you and your coordinators is terrible. Your clock management is terrible. Your defense is not good. Like, there's nothing about this coaching staff outside of Thomas Brown the last 2 weeks, a silver lining and a bright spot in the coaching of this team this season. There's nothing about this coaching staff that wasn't questionable at best, that hasn't been questionable at best to this point in the season. And when you go up and answer questions the way that Matt Eberflus did after this loss and say the words, utter the words, I have to do a better job, no less than six times in that 10-minute press conference that we just heard there about the most basic of stuff. It's just unacceptable, man. And this shows you why you had enough and had seen enough in his first 2 years as the head coach, despite the circumstances, to say this dude probably is just not it. He's probably not the guy. I know we gave him the roster that we gave him and put him in the position that we put him in, but he showed us a few things that probably tell us he's not the guy, and we should probably move on and have a fresh start for our franchise-saving number one pick quarterback.
Well, one, I'm going back to what you said earlier about everything you agreed with about Caleb Williams in the press conference. I also share those same thoughts. Caleb Williams needs to be commended for his performance. Very, very good. And I've noticed that throughout the entire season with players, whoever is speaking during these press conferences, everybody is up on Caleb Williams. And he's the rookie with the least amount of experience on anyone on this team. But you could just tell there is a good vibe around him as a quarterback. Again, going back to Justin, little unsure, whatever, there were moments, but we all kind of had that thought. It doesn't really feel like there's any sort of doubt with Caleb Williams. But how many instances this season, Rami, have we heard some of these players very unsure about Matt Eberflus? Jalen Johnson, several times on Spiegel and Holmes, has flat out, like, just refused to comment. Because he knows the backlash against Eberflus is true. When Kevin Byard said, I'm not going to go there, when asked if he lost the locker room, that answers your question right there. He lost the locker room.
Yeah.
That's a straight-up indictment that your head coach is not good enough.
No, you say no. If your coach hasn't lost the locker room, it's a real simple no.
I'm not going to go there is a no.
Exactly. That's a real simple no right there. And you're right. When a guy can't just say no, he hasn't lost a lot. We all believe in him, and we're all pointed in the same direction here. Like, when that's not the answer, you've lost the locker room, bro. There's no way around that.
He's trying to sugarcoat it.
And like I said, the last 2 weeks, much more competitive. But man, and they were talking during the game today about the word resilient has been thrown around at Hallis Hall a lot in the week leading up to this game, that they're a resilient bunch of guys, resilient football team. Are they, though? Because you could say that last year to come to do what they did in the second half of the season after everything that they endured for the previous season and a half, not just the first half of last year, but the previous season and a half, to like stay together and stay behind Matt Eberflus and close out last season the way that they did. You can maybe say that they were resilient. But man, this team reacted as poorly as you could possibly react to the Hail Mary 5 weeks ago. I remember Olin Krutz right after that game, I think it was on Monday, and he'll join Mully and Haw at 7 a.m. this green and gold, this Plumbers 911 football Monday. I worked in Milwaukee for a long time, and there were green and gold Mondays up there. Muscle memory. But and Olin said that Hail Mary, and I'm paraphrasing here, that Hail Mary lost him that game. Now let's see if it loses him more than just that game. And they went into Arizona as flat as you could be. They went into New England as flat as you can be. That's not resilience. That's a team reacting as badly as they could possibly react to a heartbreaking loss. And that reflects on your coach. And that's more big picture, but you see this within games too. You see this in smaller samples within games too. Today, no, I'm sorry, yesterday, it's Monday now. It's a Plumbers 911 football Monday, Rami. Yesterday, when they have the overturned call on the Keenan Allen reception on the sideline, then they have to go for the field goal, and it gets blocked. And then the Vikings come down and score. And you look at the Bears the following drive, and just their body language and their execution, when they come back out for their next drive, it's three and out, and it's as flat as could be, man. When bad things start to happen to this team, and they did, I guess you could say they showed some resilience by the way that they played in the second half and making it a game and taking it to overtime. But when bad things happen to this team, they tend to snowball. And I don't know if guys are expecting bad things to happen once bad things happen and then they just manifest themselves, or it's just the air being taken out of their sails and they can't quite, it takes them a while to sort of, you know, get it up and going again and to start moving. But when bad things happen to this team, they tend to snowball and it tends to take them a minute, sometimes three games, to snap out of it and wake up and go, oh wait, no, we can still make something out of this. You know what I mean? It took them three games until Green Bay to wake up and decide to compete after the Commanders' loss on the Hail Mary. It took them 2-3 drives after the overturned call and the blocked field goal in yesterday's game to sort of get over that and pick their heads up and go, oh no, we're still in this game. We can still do something. That's not resilient, man. That's the opposite of resilience. And that's a direct reflection of your head coach and whether or not they all believe in what y'all are doing and are all, as, and I've heard Matt Eberflus use this expression, pulling on the same end of the rope. That's not what's happening. And this isn't a resilient bunch. If they were a resilient bunch, they've had it knocked out of them by the way that this season has transpired.
And they would find a way to win at least one of these close games, but they haven't.
Exactly. Yeah.
He does not know how to win games. That's been like, we've had several people point this out on the station, whatever, if it's a caller, if it's a host, if it's a guest. Matt Eberflus does not know how to win games. They have to play perfectly on both. Look at the couple of games earlier in the year. We can say Will Levis won the game for week one, sure. They kind of won the game in week four a little bit, but that, I think that was more so the defense making a play. They beat two of the worst teams in football and played great on both sides. If it's close, neck and neck, tight situations, you almost feel like you have to bank on Matt Eberflus and his team finding a way to lose.
Yeah.
And again, we can point to certain players in certain moments, but again, Rami, you're hitting the nail on the head every single time. It's a direct correlation to the head coach.
Yeah. That reflects directly on your head coach in terms of the morale of the team, the vibe, when stuff hits the fan, it's on the head coach to make sure that those guys keep their head. Dude, terrible way to lose in Washington. And that should have never happened. And that goes back to decisions Matt Eberflus made in that football game. But you look at the schedule right after that, and you have two very beatable teams. Like, it was right in front of you to rebound from that loss and the way that you lost that game. It was right in front of you. And that's how you came out for those two football games? You needed 3 weeks till Green Bay showed up at Soldier Field for you to wake up and be competitive again? You needed 3 weeks to recover from one play that caused you a football game. You needed 3 weeks to wake up and be competitive again and take it to the wire against the Packers and then against the Vikings this week. They've been competitive these last 2 weeks. And again, that's, I guess, bouncing back and showing some resiliency. But it took too long, man. It took way, way too long, and you lost your season in the process.
But and that's the other difference, too. It's not like it was close and they just kind of barely got outplayed. Green Bay, they should have won that game. Like, that was theirs for the taking. Minnesota, they came back from behind, but you still were in a position to potentially win that game. Not as much as the Green Bay game, but again, we can point to the Caleb Williams sack, unfortunately, giving the ball back. But defense had an opportunity to redeem themselves, and they picked up right where they left off at the end of regulation.
He's so frustrating to listen to, man. He really, really is as frustrating a listen as any head coach I can remember. And that's saying something. Now, Mark Trestman was worse. I will say that. Mark Trestman was harder to listen to than Matt Eberflus was. But Matt Nagy wasn't. I would listen to Matt Nagy try to explain away his mistakes every day over Matt Eberflus.
At least he offered like an explanation. It just seems like his answers are very brief, and they're all the same. We'll have to look at the tape. Yeah, there were a couple things that went into it, like that last answer. Yeah, there's a couple things that went into it, but we'll have to look at the tape.
Telling you, Tyler.
But why?
Perfect loss. That was a perfect loss. I want Matt Eberflus to continue to be exposed as a fraud of an NFL head coach.
I really liked
a guy who should not be in that position.
I really liked, I think it was beginning, one of the first couple of questions they were asking him after his opening statement. I think it was Jason Leisure. He might have said, well, too much bending leads to breaking. And that's what he has prided this defense on since he's got, ever since, okay, the Montez Sweat trade. Because again, you're talking about, okay, you don't have the pieces. You got a legit pass rusher. You got some stud linebackers. You've developed these secondary guys, which I'll give them credit for. Okay, now you're in a position where you have basically everyone here who's familiar with each other. Why are you breaking? Right? Like, okay, a couple of big plays here and there.
Yeah, maybe, you're going to get beat. It's right. The NFL. They get paid too. But you know what I mean? But
it's consistently every game these last few weeks, they have been getting beat on massive, massive chunk plays.
I'd be embarrassed to say I need to be better as often as Matt Eberflus does about the most basic of things. I'd be embarrassed. To walk into my boss's office, or if I had to answer to the public about the job that I do, to after 2.5 years, say I need to be better about basic communication. I need to be better about what is my primary job during a football game, which is calling a defense. I need to be better about managing the clock and handling basic game situations. I would be embarrassed. I wouldn't be able to muster up the courage to say that. I'd have to come up with some kind of excuse.
And then it goes back to what we've been saying earlier. You are not cut out to be an NFL head coach. The peak that he will probably see in this league is a good defensive coordinator around a top 10 defense, 10th place defense. That's what the Colts were before he took the job. A good defense, probably a pretty good position coach. Right? He was a linebacker, coached linebackers a lot. I'll give him that, but not a head coach. No. We've just seen way too much of this, again, the Brian Kelly LSU press conference after they lost to USC. It just seems perfect bringing this all the way back, because it just feels like we're talking about the same basic things every single week with the Matt Eberflus-led Bears team.
Get this man as far away from my football team as possible, as soon as possible. That's what I need. 312-644-6767. But is this as bad as it looks? Is this as bad as we've made it out here the first 2.5 hours of a 5-hour overnight show talking Bears with you at 312-644-6767? Some of the Bears don't think it is, and I see some of you in my mentions on Twitter at Rami is tweeting, some of you in the text that maybe this isn't that bad. Is it? We'll discuss right after this. Rami with you on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, kicking things off here on the Overnight Show. 312-644-6767 is how you can get in on the show. Give me a call, give me a text, and let's talk some Bears on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday after the Bears fall 30-27 to the Vikings in overtime. And we're back right after this on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Weird losses at least make you guys feel like you're better than your record, better than a 5-game losing streak.
Yes, because it's like the most unironic ways to lose a game. Like, you lose on a Hail Mary tip and then stuff like that. It's like we just wasn't doing the right things to win at that moment.
Let's get back to Plumbers 911 Football Monday with Rami Makhlouf on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app. Plumbers 911 Football Mondays are presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and by Busey Bank.
That's DJ Moore saying he feels like this team is better than what their record is. Do you feel like the Bears are better than what their record is? 312 644-6767. I got Martin tweeting, at Rami is tweeting, and at 670 the score. We could be 9-2. Yeah, they're not a lot of plays from being, I don't know, 7-4, or as Martin says, 9-2. You hear DJ Moore say it there. You hear announcers on a week-to-week basis say, man, this Bears team, better than what their record looks. Look at how many one-score losses that they've had so far this year. That doesn't, and man, you hear that a lot around the NFL when teams have bad records, but they have a bunch of close losses. And people go, oh, if just this play here, that play there. No, your record is exactly who you are. Almost every team that you look at any point in the season, or if you look back at the end of a season, you are what your record says you are. And I get what DJ Moore is saying. I get what other people are saying when they say that they're better than their record and oh, so close. Like you could look at this football team and try and, like, I don't know, try and convince yourself of something and go, man, had the Bears knocked down that Hail Mary and Cairo Santos hits that game-winning field goal against the Packers, and if Caleb doesn't take that sack in overtime, or whatever moment you want to pick out of this game today that they've just played yesterday, man, they're right there. They could be 6-4, 7-4, whatever. But that's literally what separates the good teams from the bad teams in this league. Look around this league in any given week, or pick any team and go through their schedule and look at their losses, and you're going to find a lot of one-score losses. That's just the NFL on a week-to-week basis. There aren't a lot of blowouts in this league. So the bad news is, and here's a perfect, I'll just go through this week's scores in the NFL. Now you got a couple blowouts. Browns and Steelers, one score game. Vikings and Bears, one score game. Cowboys and Commanders, one score game. Chiefs and Panthers, for crying out loud, one score game. Titans and Texans, one score game. The Broncos beat the Raiders by 10, that's two scores. Seahawks beat the Cardinals by 10, that's barely two scores. There are a lot of one-score games in this league on a week-to-week basis. Nobody's getting blown. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. Carolina and Jacksonville have gotten blown out plenty this season. But very few teams.
Both by the Bears.
Yes. But very few teams are regularly getting blown out week in and week out. So the bad news is, no, the Bears aren't any better than what their record says. They're not. They're simply not. And a big part of the reason why they're not is because of their coaching staff, which is part of your team. You know, I think what DJ Moore and a lot of fans and announcers who look at this team, what they're saying when they say, man, this team is better than what their record says. And do you think that's the case? 312-644-6767. If you want to shoot a call, give a text, answer that question, or anything you need to get off your chest regarding the Bears after the 30-27 loss to the Vikings. But what people are saying is, you know, on paper, this team is better than what their record is. Or based on some of the things I've seen in terms of the talent on this roster, some of the things that they've flashed, this is a better team than what their record is. But you know why they're not? It's because they're a poorly coached football team. That's a solid roster that's terribly coached. And that's part of your team. That needs to be fixed for you to be as good as you can be. So the bad news is you're not any better than what your record says. The good news is you're not that far, because in the NFL, you're never that far, because there isn't a lot that separates the upper crust from the lower crust. There just isn't. That's why there are so many one-score games over the course of a given week or over the course of a season. Because there isn't a lot that separates the very good teams from the very bad teams. It's a few players or a few plays or a few decisions by a coach. Yeah, fix those things and you'll be right there. Like, figure out how to communicate who is supposed to be on the field and you'll be right there. Identify a problem with your field goal unit that teams have been targeting for 4 weeks now and you'll be right there. Call better plays on defense on third and long and you'll be right there. Don't go for two when you shouldn't go for two and you'll be right there. Don't challenge plays that you shouldn't challenge and you'll be right there. All those things, well, I don't know if you'll correct all those. There's always going to be mistakes. There's always going to be holes in any given season or any given game. But correct a few of those things or a handful of those things. And yeah, you're a better football team. As you stand right now, because Matt Eberflus and his staff coach this team, you're not any better than your record. You're always your record. I don't care how many one score losses you have. I don't care how many weird, wacky losses that you've had on Hail Marys or missed field goals or whatever the case might be. It doesn't matter. You're not any better than your record. And you won't be until you address the things that make you the team that you are, that make you a 4-7 football team. You are every bit a 4-7 football team. And if we really wanted to play that game, we could easily sit here and say, man, a play or two, and we're talking about a 3-8 or 2-9 football team. Like, if you want to play that game, we can play that game, and this thing could look a lot worse. I could say they're a worse football team than what their record shows, given how they beat Tennessee. So don't delude yourself and convince yourself that this is a better team than what it is. You can say they're closer than they were a year ago, 2 years ago. They're closer to being the team that you want them to be than they were back then, but they're not better than what their record says. They're every bit what their record says and could be better if they addressed some of these things, most of which stem from the coaching staff. Do you think the Bears are better than what their record says? 312-644-6767. You want to touch on that or anything Bears related, shoot me a text or give me a call. I'm here with you until 5 a.m. breaking down this Bears' latest heartbreaking loss to the Vikings, 30-27 in overtime. One of the silver linings in that game was, of course, the quarterback, Caleb Williams. Maybe his best game, considering the competition. 32-47, 340 yards, 2 touchdowns, a 103.1 passer rating against a very good Vikings defense. And here's what he had to say after the loss.
Everybody?
Caleb, on that sack in overtime, what did you see? Was it a breakdown that made you hold on to the ball for so long?
They dropped a bunch of guys out, knowing that we had to, you know, get a good chunk play. And I held the ball too long, they made a great play. I should have just, you know, thrown the ball out of bounds, lived to fight another down, another play, and it's not what happened.
What was the ending of this game like for you, just through your eyes, the rally at the end of the fourth and then overtime?
Yeah, it's encouraging. Obviously, you see these guys, talking about my teammates, fight all the way through the end, regardless of what happened. And the play is good, bad. We fought all the way to the end, and that's definitely encouraging. You don't want to be around people that are quitting, that are giving up. That's not the type of guys we have. That's encouraging. I think we got better on offense. We've gotten better over these past couple games. I think today was a testament to that, being decisive, receivers and everybody, and things like that. And you know, it's tough. It's a tough loss, just because you get the ball in overtime and you don't go and seal the deal. And I like to pride myself on 2 minutes and things like that. I like to pride myself on being able to, provide efficient drives, and that's not what happened today.
Caleb, after the onside kick, the throw you made to set up the field goal, it's one of those situations where the Vikings probably had a good sense that that's roughly where you want to go with the ball. What's the key to getting it through that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it starts from all the small things. from DJ and everybody being, you know, in the huddle, communicating well, getting out there. And then obviously, you know, speaking on practice and things like that. You know, we discussed many times about if this happens on this play, this is what we're going to do. This is where I'd like you to be. And I'll be right there with you to be able to rip it and get the ball to you. And the other guys, the other guys did a great job. Obviously, everybody's a target, you know, but the other guys, you know, grabbed the attention and allowed that, you know, that hole to open up. And I saw it and ripped it to DJ, made a great catch and got down.
I'm sorry. After the spike, you turned to the official and seemed to be lobbying for something.
Yeah, there was a new rule change that they can't move or something like that on the clock. He said that if nobody jumps off sides, that it's not a flag. So I didn't. Yeah, but you're not supposed to be able to move in that moment of that. So I guess which is what I was asking him, and that's what his response was to me, and just kind of walked off the field after that.
You knew at the start of the week the challenges that this defense present. What was the key to the preparation process to being as productive as you guys were today against it?
Yeah, obviously, you know, they're a great defense. They're number one in turnovers and all these different, you know, categories. And so I think the biggest thing was being able to be decisive. The biggest thing was having answers, whether it was alerts or hot routes or making a few checks, and obviously sometimes with those, you know, they'll get you. Sometimes be incomplete. Sometimes, you know, you'll make a check and they'll make their checks, and you just have to live with it. And then from there, you know, you go out there and, you know, they make a play, you make a play, and it goes back and forth with a defense like that. So you just got to stay in the game. You know, keep your stay right there, level headed, and. You know, from there, it's going to come down to the end of the game, which we knew it was.
Caleb, in the third quarter, you guys had a 4th-and-4, and there was confusion over whether you guys were going for it or not, at least maybe with some of the players, at least. I don't know about with you. When was it clear for you what was going on, and did you have enough time to get everybody in place before the snap?
We ended up running up against the clock in that moment. You know, in those moments, you don't really want to run up against the clock. Just because you want to get set and have your play and be able to see what's going on. And, you know, I think the confusion of, you know, because Cairo and them ran on the field and all of that. So I think the confusion had the play and, you know, come in a little bit later. And, you know, we got to the huddle and trying to scramble. And I end up mishearing what TV said. And you know, from there it went downhill and had an incomplete pass on a play that we didn't, and I didn't, you know, necessarily want to run, and we didn't, TB and the you know, other coaches, that we didn't call. And you know, from there you gotta just, you know, you obviously aren't going to try and use another timeout because, you know, the game's going to be close at the end of the game because we already used one. So you got to get up there if you have to really fast, make a few checks, and get the ball snapped. And it still is a matchup league. And so go to your best matchup guys. And right then and there, I went to Keenan, and we just missed.
You're saying you misheard the call, play call?
Yeah. Yeah.
Caleb, you had, looked like you and Kevin O'Connell had a moment there after the game. What was his message to you?
Yeah, his message just to keep going. Hell of a player, keep going, way to fight. Sucks that, you know, he said, sucks that, you know, got to go against him for a while. Or that he has to go against me for a while. But, you know, hell of a player. I'm excited to see me out there fighting and you know, leading these guys.
Caleb, do those things mean anything to you, those exchanges?
Yeah. I mean, when you get a guy like him, you know, that's you know, his offense and head coach and his guys love him. I have a few teammates old teammates over there that talk about him and have talked about him, and you know, they love him. And you know, so when you you know, and met him at the draft and all these different things, and so when you you know, when somebody comes over to you that's, you know, having guys and having Sam Darnold even out there balling, and you know, he's been a great coach so far, I believe. And you believe, and you know, you hear, and you know, those encouraging words are important.
You feel when you put the ball in the bucket on the run to DeAndre, mm-hmm. in the first quarter, what did you see there, and what did you make of kind of how open he was or wasn't?
Yeah, so I actually misread how many guys were up front. I miscounted how many guys were up front. And so I didn't use DeAndre as my hot route. And then I quickly noticed that 43 was coming free. And yeah, so after that, just go make a play. I know I had two guys running down the field, clearing it out. So there wasn't going to be much of anybody else over there. Knew they ended up matching DeAndre. And DeAndre went to flat. The backer had his eyes on me. DeAndre made a, no pun intended, but a swift move upfield. And, I triggered it, knowing how much space I had and just wanted to give him a shot kind of make up for my little mess up right there at the beginning of the play.
Whether it was that one, the 40-yarder to Keenan and the deep one to DJ, do you feel like this offense unlocked another gear to finally getting that deep passing attack going a little bit more?
I think it's, I'll be honest, I think it's come down to us being able to get on the same page, talk about every single route, talk about, if they want to cover zero us, what are you going to do here so that, when things happen, like that pass to Keenan, when he wrapped that defender, and I saw 43 out there, I knew I had to rip it. But that's something that we've talked about. And it kind of, it's weird. It's always weird. When those moments happen, when it's just something that, you've talked about, and as soon as it happens, you have an answer, you trigger and you fire it. And I think it comes down to that, coaches and everybody, being in on it and us communicating throughout the weeks, throughout the week. And then, it happens on game day.
What's been good for you about the way Thomas has coached you to play the position? I know you've talked about getting the play calls in, some of the game ops, stuff like that, but about actually playing quarterback, what has been good about the way Thomas has been coaching you?
Yeah, I think obviously, like you said, all the game ops things, and that helps tremendously because now I can get up there, I can see, I can use cadence. Like today, we use a cadence a couple times, and Harrison, he's such a savvy player, vet player, that he's down at the line now. He has to get out because I've used a couple cadences, and I've used a couple of cadences and helped out offensive line, myself, everybody, and then Thomas. I'll be honest with you, I really do think it's just how he is has helped. It's just his I don't want to use this word. Use this word, but aura, I guess. He's just he has a certain aura to him that he just allows you to play free. He knows what he wants, and he knows what he wants. Whether it's checks, alerts, and all of that, we still have a bunch of those and all these different things. But being able to play free, I think there's been time, like last game, throughout the whole game, talking to me, communicating to me, and then when it gets to 2 minute, and like today, end of the game, before OT, is just now it's time to go be Superman and go do all those different things that I can do. But throughout the game, play the game the right way, make adjustments, all these different things, throw hot, make the right reads, play within the offense, and then when it's time to be Superman, it's kind of what he tells me. That is what he tells me in the headset. Go be Superman at the end of the day, or at the end of the game. So that's kind of how it goes. Awesome. Thank you. The Bears.
There's Caleb Williams after the 30-27 loss to the Vikings in overtime. I love it's the opposite of Matt Eberflus. I love listening to that dude talk about the game that was just played and hearing him break down where things went right and where things went wrong and understanding and recognizing where he needs to get better. And unlike Matt Eberflus, when he says those things, I think he is going to go and figure those things out and get better at them. It's not just lip service of I need to get better. That's a rookie who's learning the NFL as he goes and is getting better and recognizes the things that he needs to improve on or recognizes the moments that he made mistakes and could have done something differently than what he did. And he talked about the miscommunication on that fourth down. And he owned some of that himself in saying you got to be quicker in getting the play called and blah, blah, blah. But man, he didn't get to the huddle till 15 seconds left on the play clock because of all the confusion and Cairo Santos and the long snapper running out onto the field. He didn't get to the line until 3 seconds left on the play clock and then got the snap off just before. He's the rookie in this situation. He's the rookie. And that's the head coach and the offensive coordinator and the special teams coach got to be communicating, not right there in that moment, in the two or three plays leading up to that moment, and making sure everybody knows this is four down territory. If we don't get it, we're going to be going for it. Everybody stay right where you are. Stay your asses on the sideline. You're not going out there to kick a field goal. So he owns some of it. I don't put any of it on him. That's on the head coach and his staff right there, that chaos that ensued on that fourth down play. A couple other things that jumped out to me. His little chat with Kevin O'Connell after the game. I'm probably wrong about this because, you know, he's in the same building and is at practice every day with Matt Eberflus. But why do I feel like Kevin O'Connell did more coaching up and encouraging of Caleb Williams than Matt Eberflus has ever done? Is that crazy? Is that a crazy notion to have? That's just the feeling that I got in watching that moment and hearing Caleb Williams talk about that moment. That was more than Caleb has gotten from his own head coach all season long right there.
Perfect example of this. I was driving with my dad. This was Friday afternoon. Spiegel and Holmes were on. They played a good 2 to 3 minute chunk of Kevin O'Connell talking about the scouting process of Caleb Williams, how he was a great quarterback at USC and Oklahoma, and then he dove into Rome Odunze, the wide receivers, and the whole continuity of, oh, they'll have more time together during these type of practice sessions than others.
Dude.
And going off your point, I was like, why do I feel like I know more about how these Bears players operate from listening to the Vikings head coach,
and even if
then the Bears head coach,
even if Matt Eberflus has attempted to do more in terms of the coaching and the leading of this football team than Kevin, and I'm sure he has, than Kevin, because it's a very brief moment, and Matt Eberflus has had a whole offseason and 11 games of a regular season to coach Caleb Williams and to communicate with him and to collaborate with him. You know, so it's I'm being a bit hyperbolic when I say Kevin O'Connell did more coaching of Caleb Williams than anyone did right there. But this goes to what he said about Thomas Brown at the end of the press conference when he mentioned his aura. Another way you could describe that is to say a guy's charisma or a guy's demeanor. You have to want to follow someone. You have to want to listen to someone. You have to believe in someone. And that's not just what they're saying. It's often the way in which they say it. And he talks about Thomas Brown and the way that he communicates makes you believe in him and makes you believe that he believes in you. Matt Eberflus doesn't have that, man. Kevin O'Connell has that in spades. Kevin O'Connell and Caleb Williams could say, Kevin O'Connell and Matt Eberflus could say the same thing about Caleb Williams, and it will ring truer and penetrate more coming from the lips of Kevin O'Connell, because he has head coach aura, he has head coach charisma, he has head coach demeanor, and Matt Eberflus, despite a slick haircut and a beard trim in the offseason that had a lot of people convinced that he had those things, he does not have those things. He just doesn't. On top of not being good at coaching football and, you know, making the right decisions in certain situations and communicating the way that you need to communicate, he doesn't have that thing. He doesn't have that it factor. He just doesn't. And I get so jealous watching a Kevin O'Connell or watching a Matt LaFleur or watching a Dan Campbell just in our own division. I really like Mike McDaniel. I love watching that guy at a press conference or seeing him interact with his team. Matt Eberflus just doesn't have it.
I'm not going to comment on that.
Just one more quick thing, and then we're going to go to the break on Matt Eberflus. I just came across this statistic during the break on the old Twitters. It comes from somebody who goes by Wolf with an E. Matt Eberflus defenses on 3rd and 7 or more allow a first down on a league worst Tyler, do you want to take a guess on what percentage of the time teams are getting the first down on third and long against the Bears?
What? So what the percentage is?
Yes.
40%?
71.8% of the time.
Oh, my God.
Almost three-quarters of the time on third and long, offenses will get the first down against that defensive genius that is Matt Eberflus.
I feel foolish with that answer.
No, because you're being reasonable once again.
That's probably second place is probably about 40%.
Oh my God!
I don't know what it is, but I'm just saying. Like, we talk about the same things every single week.
312-644-6767. If you want to get in on the show, I see some of you holding right there. I will get right to your calls, right to your texts, right to your tweets after a short break. You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday right here on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is presented to you by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank, and we'll be back right after this on 670 The Score.